for antiwar.com and Chaos Radio 95.9 FM in Austin, Texas. I'm Scott Horton, and this is Antiwar Radio.
God damn, it's a brand new payback. From your straight gangsta, Mac, and straight gangsta, Black. How many motherfuckers gotta pay? Went to the shelf and dusted off the AK. Cap's gotta get peeled. Cause the nigga you love to hate still can kill it with. It ain't no pop, cause that sucks. One, and you can new jack swing on my neck. Down with the niggas that I bail out. I'm platinum bitch and I didn't have to sell out. Fuck you, Ice Cube, that's what the people say. Fuck America, still with the triple K. Cause you know when my nine goes fuck, get a bunch of head like a watermelon, dropping 12 stories up. Now let's see who drop. Punk motherfuckers trying to ban hip hop. R.B. and a running man. I'm the one that's there with the gun in hand. Make sure before you buck with, duck quick, punk. Cause I'm the wrong nigga to fuck with. Hell yeah, Sonya, better tell him. Ice Cube and I'm rolling with the motherfucking L.M. It's the number one crew in the area. Make a move for your gat, now bury ya. Ashes to ashes, dirt to dirt. When I put in work, cause lynch mob niggas are the craziest, and y'all motherfuckers can't fade my shit. South Central, that's where the lynch mob dwell. Hitting fools up with the big ass sale. One time can't hold me back. Sweatshirt, khakis, and croaker sacks. Stop giving juice to the Raiders, cause Al Davis never paid us. I hope he wearing vests. It's all about the L-E-N-C-H. Y'all know the rest. Motherfucking crew, motherfucking mob. Do our motherfucking job in a motherfucking squad. In 91, Ice Cube grew strong and bigger. And I'm the wrong nigga to fuck
one,
with.
One, two, three, and a four.
Wait a minute, wait a minute, wait a minute.
Drop an old school beat. Like I said, it's a brand new payback. 991, let's see who beats get jacked. Sir Jinx flew a little bit taller.
Keep the whack beats out.
True motherfucking baller. And hoes can't roll on. Even bitches looking like in vogue got a hold on. Don't let me catch those gates in traffic. I got a habit, the pills cap backwards. I hope he wear vest too. And his best blue. Going up against the Zulu. Break his spine like a jellyfish. Kick his ass till I'm smelling shit. Off with the head, off with the head, I say. And watch the devil start kicking. Run around like a chicken. Grand dragon finger licking. Yo, turn him over with a spatula. Now we got Kentucky Fried Cracker. Mess with the cube, you get fucked quick, pig. Cause I'm the wrong nigga to fuck with.
Last person in the world you want to fuck with.
All right, everybody, welcome to Antiwar Radio. I'm Scott. This is Chaos Radio 92.7, 95.9 FM in Austin, Texas. And I'm pretty sure I've got enough caffeine and nicotine coursing through my bloodstream right now. Let's keep this thing interesting. Let's hope so. No interviews today, just me and you and the news. So if anybody wants to call in the show, the number is 512-646-6446, 512-646-6446. You know, talk about what the hell is going on around here, particularly in regards to our government's war against everyone else in the world and, well, the war against us, too. But, yeah, you know, whatever. Call in, talk about whatever you want. Let's see, I guess I should try to sound like a radio professional. It's Open Line Thursday! Whatever, dude. Call in if you want. Antiwar.com. That's the website. That's where all the news is. Eric Garris, Justin Raimondo, Matt Barganier, Jeremy Sapienza, Jason Ditz, Margaret Griffiths. Griffiths? Or is it Griffiths? I forgot exactly. Yeah, everybody, we all pitch in, and, we got this website, antiwar.com. I'm the new guy. I'm not taking credit for their work. Eric and Justin Raimondo have been at this since, the mid-1990s. I'm the new guy. Jeremy Sapienza and those guys have been there a lot longer than I have as well. But yeah, so the point is this. We recognize at antiwar.com, you can either have a republic or you can have an empire. And you cannot have it both ways. Period. End of discussion. There is no chance for liberty when you have militarism, when you have a permanent state of war overseas. And so we prefer our liberty to the fun of, you know, vicariously killing foreigners or whatever it is that Americans love so much about it. So that's the premise of antiwar.com. We got all the news from all over the world every single day from wide and varied sources. And the very best opinion columnist, too. Justin Raimondo was my favorite columnist for a long time before I ever had any association with antiwar.com. He's got eagle eyes for what's going on. The three times a week writes Behind the Headlines, which is a very apt title for that column. And I can go on down the list. At least the order it's in today, Neboch Samalek writes primarily about Europe. Used to be the Balkan Express. Now he's changed the name of his column to Moments of Transition, and is doing more Europe rather than just Balkans, expanding a little bit, but great libertarian perspective on the European Union and NATO and United Nations and United States intervention in the Balkans and so forth. Charles Pena writes some good stuff. Sacha Machusak, you know Pena from Cato, former Cato Institute guy. Sacha Machusak is a libertarian, writes for us from China, all about relations with that country and what's going on internally there. Always very interesting to read Sacha Machusak. I wish he had like some kind of great satellite phone or something. I could get a hold of him. Alan Bach from the Orange County Register, of course, our most optimistic columnist. It's always a breath of fresh air to read. Doug Bandow, another great libertarian scholar who has done a lot of incredible work and does, like he's done this week, a lot of great book reviews. And, you know, he has time to read all those great books that some of us can't really get around to reading sometimes, and recommends the best of them. Ivan Elin from the Independent Institute. The State Perpetuates Itself by Failing is the title of this week's article, if that gives you a clue as to where he's coming from. Philip Giraldi from the American Conservative Magazine, former CIA operative, anti-war conservative type. David R. Henderson from the Hoover Institution, the wartime economist. His current article is Remembering Hiroshima. Very good one. Praful Bidwai writes from The World's Most Dangerous Places, basically covering the conflict between India and Pakistan for the most part, the dispute over Kashmir and so forth. And Ron Hawk-Cohen writes The Letter from Israel, anti-war libertarian Israeli there. And then in the additional contributors, well, there's me and Matt Barganier, our editor, Pat Buchanan, Juan Cole, Jonathan Cook, Christopher DeLiso, Sabelle Edmonds, Tom Englehart, Mike Evans, Joshua Frank, Aaron Glantz, Leon Hatter, Jorge Hirsch, Dar Jamail, Kathy Kelly, William S. Lynn, Jim Loeb, Ray McGovern, Brendan O'Neill, Ron Paul, John Pilger, Murray Polner, Gareth Porter, Gordon Prather, Charlie Reese, Paul Craig Roberts, Michael Scheuer, Norman Solomon, Paul Sperry, Joseph Stromberg, John Basil Utley, Jude Winiski, well, he's dead, but we have a lot of archives of him from back in the day, and more. Those are the guys who actually run antiwar.com columns. But then, of course, there's the viewpoint section every day, the best opinion pieces from around the country and the world, too. So anyway, I don't know. I'm just saying antiwar.com is awesome, and it ain't just because that's my job. That's where it's at. I think I said this on the show the other day. Pro-war people read antiwar.com, too. Well, you can read every newspaper on earth, or you can stop by antiwar.com. They're going to have pretty much everything, at least in terms of foreign policy. Also, I'll encourage you to stop by my blog, Stress, thestressblog.com. Take part in the conversation there. Vineyard Saker has put up two interesting posts about Iran. We'll get to in a moment up there this morning. All the archives of my interviews are at scotthortonshow.com. Horton like here's a who. And libertystickers.com. If you go there, you can get anti-government propaganda for the back of your car and help keep the show going. That's libertystickers.com. Look for the Scott Horton section there. And actually, I just put up... Jeez, something just crashed. I just put up about 80 new stickers, something like that, 75, somewhere around there, new stickers in the antiwar.com, Scott Horton section at libertystickers.com, and including antiwar.com stickers, and also a lot of great anti-Hillary and anti-Giuliani and anti-Fred Thompson and anti-McCain stickers. More coming soon about those candidates, but some really good anti-Hillary stickers. Check them out, the Scott Horton section at libertystickers.com. And let's see, mention that website and that one and that one and that one. I guess scott@antiwar.com is my email address. Anybody wants to send me an email? Sometimes people send me emails. That's the address to do it, scott@antiwar.com. And so that's all I got to say about that. Just now I went to get a refill at the Quickie Mart next door, and on the counter... they have these little, you know, tear-off-a-leaflet kind of things. Stand up and speak out. State and federal cigarette taxes have been raised 73 times since the year 2000, increasing the average price of cigarettes 80% a pack. Everyone should pay their share of taxes. What kind of commie crap is that? But it's unfair to single out smokers once again for a 156% tax increase. Tell Congress they're going too far, paid for by Philip Morris USA. Oh, of course they want us to pay our taxes. Reasonable ones so we can pay subsidies. Yeah. But, you know, they don't have to tax us in order to subsidize the tobacco companies. They can just print that money on their counterfeiting machine. Enough is enough. Let Congress know targeting smokers with a $6.10 a carton tax hike is going too far. Say no to higher cigarette taxes. Visit StopTheFETIncrease.com or call 1-866-527-4494. That's 866-527-4494. And get organized with other tobacco smokers to tell Congress that you don't like them because they keep stealing your money. Man, I think sales taxes are so criminal. Just think of a system where the government goes around and basically deputizes every retail customer anywhere. Retail store owner, retail salesman. Every clothing store, every Quickie Mart, every grocery store, every sandwich shop where you might stop for lunch. They're being forcibly deputized by the state. We get used to it. Oh, yeah, whatever it is costs, 8 or 16 or 24 or whatever cents more than what it says. Yeah, that's how it is. Let's just give, 8 or more cents on the dollar to government on everything we buy. We're used to it. We don't think about it. But what's really happening there? It's the government telling the Quickie Mart clerks, telling their owners that if they don't... if they don't collect the sales taxes from you and give them up to the state, well, then the state's going to screw them and basically forcibly deputizing them. Fuck. Here's some music.
Everything you do. You think you're private. on your every thought. So my power draws.
Yeah, this is Anti-War Radio. I'm Scott. And hopefully took care of some of that background noise coming in there. All right, so yeah. Hey, I wanted to point you to the LouRockwell.com blog, which, you know, this might as well be my homepage. I'll tell you what, if I didn't have all these responsibilities, which I continue to say, yes, I'll do that and take on even more of them, but if I didn't have all these responsibilities, I probably wouldn't do a damn thing all day but sit here in my underwear smoking pot and clicking refresh on the LouRockwell.com blog. That's about all I need to know in the world, basically. What's happening with the Ron Paul campaign, updated constantly, always. And it's great. That's LouRockwell.com/blog, I think, is the address. Anyway, you'll find it. Daniel McAdams, I believe that he is an advisor to Congressman Ron Paul, presidential candidate Ron Paul. If I have my facts straight, he is a foreign policy advisor to Dr. Paul. And in my experience reading what Daniel McAdams has written, I have come to believe that he is an extremely intelligent individual and has a really in-depth grasp of American foreign policy and, you know, just overall a relationship with the rest of the world, and for that matter, internal politics and so forth in the United States. So if I have that right, that he does still work for Dr. Paul, then Dr. Paul is certainly lucky to have him, and I'm sure he knows that. Daniel McAdams has written this on the Lou Rockwell blog. He wrote, although other bloggers have been cited elsewhere on the Barber Griffith PR firm move to replace Maliki with Alawi, they've all missed the point. This is not a Democrat plot to undermine Republican policy in Iraq. Dude, this is the party shifting tactics toward open conflict with Syria and Iran. Anything else is diversionary propaganda, especially when it comes from an ensconced neocon at the Hudson Institute. Case in point, Barber Griffith is a Republican firm, no doubt about it. Look at the staff. But its highly paid push to replace Maliki, who is veering wildly off the reservation, has been picked up without skipping a beat by Democrat neocon Hillary Clinton, who has enthusiastically endorsed the replacement of Maliki. Quoth Hillary, I share Senator Levin's hope that the Iraqi parliament will replace Prime Minister Maliki with a less divisive and more unifying figure when it returns in a few weeks. Let's see here. In recent weeks, Maliki has reached out to both Iran and Syria to look for solutions to the incomprehensibly murderous civil war counter-occupation in Iraq. See, yeah. Sorry, I'm really no good at this. And for these efforts to quell the sectarian and anti-occupation violence, in other words, to secure Iraq so that American troops can be safely brought home and victory legitimately declared, he is rewarded with open calls for his replacement with one who embraces the neocon agenda of expanding the war into Iran and Syria. So who is against success in Iraq? They write to Congress saying, don't you dare interfere with the success of our soldiers in Iraq. Two questions, who is succeeding and who is interfering? Message to Hudson's scholar and anyone who quoted him, the two parties do not disagree about U.S. policy in the Middle East, or Darfur or elsewhere for that matter. The party has total unity, but for Paulian and Kucinichian flies buzzing noisily past, so yeah. Pardon me, I'm doing a terrible job reading out loud. But, yeah, anyway, important point there, even if it didn't make any sense as repeated out loud by me. It's a Republican PR firm that's come out with this Democratic plan to, well, it's a joint plan. It's Imperial Senators Levin and Warner came out and said, yeah, it's time to ditch the Maliki government, which, you know, to stop supporting someone is fine. To support a coup d'etat and replace the government that was so widely ballyhooed as the Purple Fingers democratically elected wonderful American gift to the people of Mesopotamia and all that, to do a forceful coup d'etat against them and to replace Maliki with Alawi, that's going to be its own PR problem right there. But anyway, Hillary has endorsed this, and apparently a lot of narrow-sighted people were looking at this in terms of electoral politics. Oh, the Democrats are trying to undermine the wonderful strategy and so forth. But, of course, Bush was asked about this. And it's funny, there's a headline, I think it's in the New York Times today, that says White House backs Maliki or something. But the headline could have just as easily been White House refrains from backing Maliki. They were asked and gave very noncommittal sort of answers like, well, you know, we sure do wish he was doing a lot better for us than he is and that kind of thing. So, no, the White House did not call for a coup d'etat publicly yet, but that's pretty lukewarm support, if you ask me. And you know, maybe, and in fact, I forget if it was Matt or Justin at the antiwar.com blog here, Maliki's new street cred, it's Justin Raimondo, talks about, well, you might even think that they set it up this way, that America would, you know, have some Republicans and Democrats, the administration would have some Republicans and Democrats denounce Maliki and call him weak and disapprove of him at the same time that he's traveling to Iran and Syria and trying to cut a deal to work everything out. That, you know, if these guys were smart, that's what they do, right, is talk really bad about him and, you know, give him a little bit of the appearance of independence from the American occupation, if that's what they really want, is for him to be successful. But, nah, too clever by more than half, I think, is what Justin wrote here in the blog entry. That may be the effect, to go ahead, right before the planned coup, go ahead and strengthen the prime minister a little bit more right before killing him. Or whatever they do with them. But I think that Daniel McAdams is exactly right. And if you have neglected so far to read The Redirection by Seymour Hersh from, it was February, right? Yeah, I'm pretty sure. But anyway, the article is in the New Yorker magazine. It's called The Redirection, and it talked about America backing an Al-Qaeda-like group. I'm not saying they're under the control of bin Laden and Zawahiri or whatever, but basically radical Sunni jihadist Salafist types. In Lebanon, the Fatah al-Islam, as part of a larger strategy, the redirection of basically trying to undo the past 4.5 something years of, almost 4.5 years of occupation of Iraq. Because of course, as discussed every day here on Anti-War Radio, the Iraq War basically just imported the Iranian Revolution and empowered the Shia. Oops. So now they're trying to figure out how to take it back again. And after all this time of backing the Dawa Party and the Supreme Council for Islamic Revolution, the Supreme Islamic Council, it's called now, now apparently they're ready to stab them in the back and leave them high and dry and switch sides to the Ba'athists. Back to the Ba'athists. And, I don't know. It's interesting. The president gives his, speech yesterday comparing all this to Vietnam, and it looks like they're preparing to do a DM-style coup. And now this guy, Iyad Alawi, you remember him, right? When Paul Bremer, did the big ceremony 3 days early so that nobody would show up and kill them all at it, you know, that you couldn't, especially at that time, or maybe even less so now, give real advance notice that you're going to have some ceremony about a bunch of people showing up and killing you. So they did it a couple of days early, but Paul Bremer handed over, quote-unquote, sovereignty to the interim prime minister, Iyad Alawi, in, I guess it was June of 2004, right? Yeah. And that guy, Iyad Alawi, was a former Ba'athist Mukhbirat, I think is how you pronounce it, the Iraqi Ba'athist Saddam Hussein secret police there, and was a truck bomber, terrorist, assassin, murderer for Saddam Hussein and the Ba'athists and the CIA back when Saddam Hussein was a good guy. Not that he ever changed, just our policy did, you understand. And then he went to work for the CIA in Europe, murdering people in Europe, putting his truck bomber skills to use and so forth, and lived in exile, I think, in London for most of the time up until the invasion, between the first Gulf War and the second. And then soon after becoming prime minister, he's the guy who, you might remember, the Australian papers covered it. There were American GIs who witnessed this, as well as Iraqi civilians, that Iyad Alawi took four arrested so-called terrorist insurgents and put them up against a fence and shot them all in the head, one by one. Pow, 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 pow. And then bragged about it. Said, hey, they were guilty, I can tell. It's for the greater good, etc., like that. You can see how this guy gets along with George Bush. And, of course, Seymour Hersh also wrote an article in Christmas time 2005, I think. Is that right? I think so. I think it was written right after the, yeah, that's right, Christmas time 2005, because the August, September, October 2005 is when they finally put in the constitution for the Islamic Republic of Iraq, and then they held their elections in December. And then right after that, I believe before the new year, Seymour Hersh wrote an article all about how George Bush had ordered the CIA through cutouts and through other countries' intelligence agencies and so forth, a covert action to attempt to rig that wonderful democratic blessing of the purple finger election for Iyad Alawi, but it didn't work. He still got 1% or something anyway, and the Iran parties won. And the headline in the Post the next day was, oops, election result opposite of U.S. vision. Yeah, that's what they call that. So now, here we go. They haven't been able to get the predominantly Sunni areas of Iraq to submit to the rule of the Dawa Party after all this time. So now they said, ah, screw it. Let's go ahead and befriend the so-called Sunni insurgency, the people who have done the most to resist American occupation all this time. Let's go ahead and befriend them. America's always been at war with Eurasia. What are you talking about? I mean, was it East Asia or Eurasia? Yeah, whichever one we're at war with. Yeah, that's the one we're at war with and always have been, okay? You know, the history will record this era from 1950-something through 2025 as the era when America backed the Ba'athists in Iraq. Oh, except for two or three years in the middle there where they backed the Iran parties for a little while. You know, people will hardly remember. So I guess that's a good idea if you're going to start a war with Iran to try to get American soldiers into Anbar province and so forth where they're less likely to be completely surrounded and shot to death by local Shiites. Remember another Seymour Hersh article, the Iran plans. Was it the Iran plans or was it the next act? I think it was the Iran plans, where he quoted one intelligence source as saying, if America bombs Iran, the south of Iraq is going to go up like a candle. He said the Iranian mullahs could take Basra with 10 imams and a sound truck. Hi there. I'm this or that Ayatollah. If you believe in God, grab your AK. It's time to force the occupiers out. Thank you for your patience and biding your time. Today is the day. Let's do this. and the south of Iraq goes up like a candle. William S. Lynn wrote in the American Conservative magazine, this is how to lose an army. Dig in, surge and dig into Iraq, and then dare Iran to strike. And you know, those mullahs have proven they're willing to lose some men in order to fight a war. You might remember it used to be Reagan and George Bush's policy to support Saddam Hussein to contain the Iranian Revolution. I could swear there's an argument in here somewhere for just plain old anti-interventionism. You know, we shouldn't be backing Iran or Iraq, the Dawa Party or the Baathists or anybody else. It's kind of out of America's jurisdiction, if you see what I mean. But, so anyway, to the stressblog.com, Vineyard Saker has two posts here. Fox is pushing for Iran war, Senator says, and he quotes Bernie Sanders, the independent socialist senator from Vermont, denouncing the neocons and denouncing the Fox News Network for pushing us toward war with Iran. And then I like this, you know, why pick on Fox when, as the next post down says, hey, the Washington Post is on board for this thing. CNN and MSNBC are on board for this thing. Basically every major paper, I guess there have been a few editorials in what, you know, the Seattle Times or the LA Times or something against it. But basically every newspaper in America has accepted the phony premise that Iran is all of a sudden responsible for all of America's deaths in Iraq. Or at least all of them in the last 6 months or something. Some propaganda line load of bull. And I really figured this out. I'm going to end up playing this clip later in the show, I think. The same one I played yesterday of Ron Paul on Morning Joe. Here's the host of this show is a former congressman. And now he's a TV cable host. Is probably one of the better tempered and more informed of the various talking heads on the cable news networks, Joe Scarborough from Scarborough Country. And it's plainly obvious as he's asking Ron Paul about what's going on in the world that he doesn't have any idea. All of his questions are based on, are so plainly and clearly based on a basically empty understanding of what's going on over there. I mean, he says, what causes suicide terrorism? And Ron Paul says, well, it's foreign occupation that caused it. Our troops on their land is what causes it. And he says, yeah, but our troops weren't occupying Iraq before 9/11. And Ron Paul said, yeah, well, it wasn't Iraqis who did 9/11. It was Saudis. And they did it because our troops were on their soil. Huh? You know, I would like to think that you and your friend and everybody else would be able to just reason that out themselves, right? We all remember that we had a bunch of troops in Saudi Arabia, and we all know that bin Laden and the vast majority of his, you know, band of pirates, whatever they call themselves these days, are Saudis. That the hijackers predominantly, all the muscle guys were brought in from Saudi Arabia. We ought to be able to figure that out our damn selves. You know, without, never mind reading Robert Pape's book, Dying to Win, and, you know, seeing the mathematics. But Morning Joe couldn't possibly figure this out himself. And I'll bet you if he had asked Ron Paul about, is it the case that Iran's responsible for killing our guys in Iraq? I'm certain that Ron Paul would have given him an answer based on skepticism. But, Joe Scarborough, I'd bet you, you know, dollars to dimes. He believes it. As far as he can tell, he's got no reason not to believe it. In fact, Joe Scarborough probably thinks that he knows that Iran is responsible for killing our guys in Iraq. He probably believes that this is an established fact. That this is a thing that he knows to be true. When in fact, it's only a lie that he mistakenly believes. And I'd like to point my finger at Joe Scarborough and scream my head off and say, liar, you're the liar. He's not a liar. He's just completely empty-headed. And I think that it's the same thing at CNN and Fox News and the New York Times and everywhere else. I mean, obviously, some of these guys have their own agendas. You know, I just bought a lot of Lockheed stock. I'm supporting this war, you know, that kind of thing. But for the most part, I think that the vast majority of journalists in this country just have no idea. They don't have the background knowledge to be able to weigh these things. And what the hell kind of background knowledge do I have? Have I ever been to the Middle East? No. Do I speak a word of any of their languages over there? Have I ever read the Quran or you know, the big book of the last 100 years of Middle East policy or anything like that? No. No. But even I can tell you very simply that the Shiite militias backed by Iran are our friends. And the Shiite militias not backed by Iran are the ones who are killing our guys in Iraq. That's easy peasy. It's right there in the very same newspapers that lie and say otherwise. And, you know, you do not have to know the name and exact loyalty of every single little tribe in all of southern Iraq. What matters is when it comes to organized men with rifles who follow orders and, you know, are prepared forces for killing people, there are two major factions, the Supreme Islamic Council and their Badr Corps and Muqtada al-Sadr and his Mahdi army. Muqtada al-Sadr and his Mahdi army are nationalists. The Supreme Islamic Council guys are not. Sadr knows the Iranians. The Dawah Party and the Supreme Islamic Council and their Badr Corps work for the Iranians. Those are the people who won the election. Those are the people we've been backing all this time. And now you know that they know they're lying, at least the ones who come up with these talking points in the first place. Never mind the, you know, vacuous idiots who pass this stuff on to us. But they know they're lying when they say things like Iran-backed Shiite militias. Well, come on now. It's been since 2003 and, you know, since the war was brand new. It's okay to go ahead and name Shiite militias. We know who these guys are, you know, to some degree, right? They could tell us if they meant Sadr and his Mahdi army outright. But then the idea that he is the puppet of the Iranians is just propaganda. We're backing the Iranians. It's the nationalists who are fighting our guys. And particularly, it has been our new greatest friends, who've always been our greatest friends, the Sunni former Ba'athist types. Those are the ones who have killed the vast majority of American soldiers over there. The vast, vast majority. There's only been two major battles against Muqtada al-Sadr's forces, none against the Badr Corps. They're our good friends. And the two major battles against the Sadr forces, the Mahdi army, was in April and August of 2004. During the first battle of Fallujah and shortly before the second one. Now, it seems to be the case that the Mahdi army have started producing these new and improved landmines. They're mostly being set off in more heavily Shia areas and areas controlled by Sadr's forces, his Mahdi army militia. But how much evidence is there that these bombs are coming from Iran? That was it. I just listed all the evidence. Did you hear it? Right. There's not any. There's not any. Just lies. Just assertions from the vice president and his neoconservative cabal. Only lies. But you know what there is instead of that? There's a dozen, at least, probably two or three dozen, separate, different news reports in Western media. Never mind, you know, the Al-Qaeda-controlled media of Europe and the rest of the world. Even Europe. Count them in with Al-Qaeda, right? They're the enemy, aren't they? You hate everybody, don't you? But even the American media, dozens of times, at least a dozen times, have reported that American soldiers in Iraq have found factories where they make EFP bombs, explosively formed penetrator new and improved landmines. They are being made in Iraq by Iraqis. And now, how much evidence is there that any of them have been manufactured in Iran and sent to Iran? That's right, no evidence. None whatsoever. And this is cost, now it's moved into first place as casus belli number one. This is our excuse for war. This is what George Bush and Dick Cheney and John McCain and Hillary Clinton and the rest of these lying, bloody-handed, butcherous murderers are going to cite when the bombs start falling on Iran. They're going to say, well, the Iranians have been backing Shiite militias. Don't ask which ones. We don't want to be that specific, or you might be able to nail us down and contradict us on our lies. Iran's been supplying Shiite militias with these EFP bombs. It's a terrible crisis. It's all Iran's fault that American soldiers are dying in Iraq. No, it's not George Bush's fault. It's not the people they're occupying that are shooting at them. No. It's the country next door. The ones that we've been backing this entire time up until, you know, this week. Well, not this entire time, I guess, but it was pretty obvious, wasn't it? Back in 2004, I believe it was the very early part of 2004 when they were pushing for this caucus system. Yeah, we're going to appoint a bunch of people to, pick the government leaders and so forth. And then maybe one day we'll have local elections. We're going to ease into this whole democracy thing kind of backwards and slow. And then the Ayatollah Ali al-Sistani, who, to my understanding, is the highest-ranking Shiite religious cleric in the world, came out and said, hey, if you believe in God, I'm going to need you to go outside and demand one man, one vote, okay? And so that's what everybody did. The Ayatollah said that a test of whether I'm religiously devout or not is whether I'm going to demand one man, one vote in the south of Iraq. Okay. So out in the street they came by the tens, or was it hundreds of thousands? I think it was hundreds of thousands. It was like 400,000 or 500,000 people came out into the street to say, oh no, we're voting or you're going to have to start this war all over again, pals. And so the Bush administration, not having any other options, set about the path of backing Sistani's friends in the Supreme Islamic Council and the Dawa party there. So, anyway, I don't know whether you people can stand it or what, but I really can't. I am so sick and tired of debunking these lies that are so thin and that are so easy to see through that even Joe Scarborough or any of these other idiots on TV ought to be able to figure it out. You know, how hard is it to pull up, Rolling Stone or the American Prospect and read some Robert Dreyfus, huh? How hard is that? I don't even think you need to read Robert Dreyfus to see this stuff. I think it's, pretty much all right there. Even in the Post, in bits and pieces here and there. And of course, the second place excuse for bombing Iran is that they're developing nuclear weapons. Well, that's just a damned lie. And even the President of the United States 2 weeks ago said, well, we're concerned that with their enrichment of uranium, that may be a step toward having a nuclear weapons program. Okay? That is as clear of an admission as you are going to get from George Bush. That there is no nuclear weapons program in Iran and that he knows it. He has fear. Oh, poor George has fear that they may one day take what they've learned, enriching uranium to 3.5% for their electricity, and that then they may one day begin to have to create a nuclear weapons program, which there is absolutely no evidence whatsoever it exists right now. But of course, to do that, they would have to withdraw from the Non-Proliferation Treaty, which, by the way, guarantees their right to enrich uranium for peaceful purposes. They would have to kick the IAEA inspectors out, who, by the way, are in their country right now under their safeguards agreement to the IAEA for enforcing the signature to the Non-Proliferation Treaty. And then they could begin to try to make a nuclear bomb, and then it would take them years. So this threat from Iran is just make-believe. It's just not true. And this guy, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, first of all, was only elected in July of 2005 because George Bush came out for 2 weeks straight before the election and said, "Hey, listen, Iranian people, you better not elect the right-winger. Hey, listen, Iranian people, you better give up your nukes. Hey, listen, Iranian people, you better elect a reformer, the guy we want you to vote for." That's the only reason Ahmadinejad even won in the first place to be president of Iran. And what does it mean that he's the president of Iran? Not much. As Juan Cole put it, it means he's approximately equivalent to our Secretary of the Interior. Now be careful, because you go around the world, secretaries of the interior are the guys in charge of the police states, you know, the secret police forces that kidnap you and skin you alive and so forth. That's how it is in most countries. In our country, the head of the Department of Interior is, you know, what, national parks and monuments and so forth. He's got no power at all to do anything to anyone. That guy. That's what Ahmadinejad's job description really is in Iran. He has no authority over the foreign policy of Iran. Ahmadinejad has no authority over the foreign policy of Iran. And you know what he has absolutely less control over than that? Much less control than the nothing that he has over foreign policy? The military. He is not the commander-in-chief of the military of Iran. He's nowhere near it. So they can put every, you know, montage in the world where you don't get to hear what the guy's saying. You don't get to hear the translator going, "Well, this is a clip of Ahmadinejad saying this." No, you just see a montage of Ahmadinejad seeming angry and pointing his finger in the air. God, you people are such children, man. How easy is that? Look, everybody, a brown man on TV. Saddam Hussein, big mustache, Hitler. So damn insane. Ha ha ha. Get it? Sounds like his name, but it's not. Saddam Hussein, evil, scary, danger. Then we're actually attacked by people avenging the deaths of the people killed in the name of a war against Saddam Hussein, which never hurt a hair on his head. And then they say, "Osama bin Laden, look, scary brown man, thing on his head. Danger, evil, scary." And then they switch back to Saddam Hussein. Saddam Hussein, brown guy, mustache, scary. Look at that beret. Isn't it threatening? And now, well, just, you know, get the same theme music and get this, you know, the same little drum machine and horn sounds and whatever, and play the montage of the looming imminent threat of the Iranian dictator Ahmadinejad, who is not the dictator at all, but is merely the Secretary of the Interior. I mean, I don't really understand. Is it that they did a focus group test and the focus group wasn't scared of Khamenei? Is that what happened? They did a focus group and the focus group said, "Well, that guy Khamenei, he seems like, you know, a reasonable guy for a theocratic tyrant, you know, from Asia somewhere. Oh, but that Ahmadinejad, look at that beard. Oh, he's scary. I'm scared of him." Is that why they focus on Ahmadinejad? Because it's Khamenei who has all the power, right? Now, I'm no scholar on Iranian affairs, but it's the Ayatollah who runs the place, right? Right. Okay, good. I guess he's not as scary for your montage on TV. But there we go. There's our big two excuses to bomb them. Iran's killing our guys in Iraq, and Iran's making nuclear bombs, and there's not a shred of evidence to back up either claim. You know, here we are, November 2002. The president makes wild assertions. The TV repeats it like it's an established fact. And here we are on the eve of war, and it's pure bull, and nobody's learned a single thing. And you know what? This bothers me. I'm not certain if I even mentioned this. I don't think I've mentioned this on the show. But this is from last Wednesday. Members of Congress head to Israel for summer sun and summitry. By Nathan Gutman in The Forward. From New York. Right, isn't that where The Forward's published in New York? Jerusalem, the summer tour season to Israel for American politicians reached its peak this month with nearly 10% of the House of Representatives visiting Jerusalem in the past 2 weeks. 40 Republicans and Democrats met with Israeli and Palestinian leaders in two separate rounds of intensive touring mixed with high-level policy meetings. This year's tours came at a crucial moment as Congress is considering a massive and controversial arms deal proposed by the White House and aimed at both Israel and Saudi Arabia. In addition, American policymakers are readying for an international summit in November that will deal with the situation in the Middle East. The congressional trips, sponsored by pro-Israeli groups, have become one of the main attractions offered during the summer recess. They have us on our feet at 8 o'clock in the morning and we run around until late at night, said one of the staff members accompanying the members of Congress. 10% of the House of Representatives has spent their summer break in Israel. And the only place I've read about it is in The Forward. I guess, you know, I haven't really been looking at all the blogs lately. Maybe this got picked up. I don't know if it did. It certainly didn't get picked up by any major media I'm exposed to. Let there be no question where this policy against Iran comes from. It's not in question. It's a simple fact that the prime force behind the push for war with Iran in this country is the Israel lobby. There is no other interest that wants war with Iran, except the vice president himself. And I don't know what the hell his problem is. In the 1990s, he used to criticize Bill Clinton for all the sanctions on Iran. Said, hey man, I'm a businessman. I'm trying to do some business here. We could be friends with the Iranians. Who cares who's their government, man? Let's do business. Let's trade. Let's have peace. That was what Dick Cheney said in the 90s. But, you know, regardless of him, the only other force in American politics for this war is the Israel lobby. And therefore, the vast majority of both parties in both houses of Congress. And that is a real problem. There's nothing illegal about being a lobbying group. Hell, I wish I had a lobbying group. I would send my lobbyist to D.C. to tell those people to stop doing whatever they're doing all day, every day. If I was really rich, I'd, you know, bring a bunch of y'all together and try to make friends with even more rich people and spend so much money setting up the America lobby that finally the voice of the Israel lobby would be drowned out. I actually kind of like that, the America lobby. How about the individual liberty lobby? No, because then that sounds too much like the liberty lobby, crazy Jew-hating right-wing assholes. So, I don't know. Anyway, the fact of the matter is, it's fine to be a lobbyist, okay? It's fine to come for private, free people to associate with each other and donate money towards setting up groups, spend their money to set up groups to influence Congress. That's fine. But the problem is, there's apparently no force organized in the United States to counter their view. And the Israel lobby is extremely organized, and numerous congressmen have talked about the fact that they will target any congressman who votes on against what AIPAC, the American-Israeli Public Affairs Committee, wants, Any congressman who votes opposite of what they want, they will target them. They will support their opponent in the next election, doesn't matter which party they are. They will do everything they can to destroy any congressman who does not toe their line completely. And again, that's great, but it is what it is. And a big part of what it is ignored by the American people. But let's get this straight. Who's the constituency in Indiana or Utah or Minnesota who wants war with Iran? Which American business interests want war with Iran? Probably none except for Lockheed, really. I mean, that's it. It's not in the interest of the American people to have a war with Iran. The only people who want a war with Iran in this country are at think tanks in Washington, D.C. That's it. And, you know, it isn't treason, really, because the treason statutes are very specific. It's the only crime defined in the Constitution, and it's a very specific definition. So I don't know if it's really treason, but it is, you know, it's a serious problem for American policy to be so completely dominated by a lobby for a foreign government. And this is what happens when you have an empire. This is just what I was telling you yesterday about earmarks in Congress. Everybody's trying to criticize Ron Paul. Well, the War Party is trying to criticize Ron Paul for using his influence as a congressman to decide how the tax money stolen from his constituents is returned in a way to try to benefit them as much as he can, even though he votes against the appropriations in the first place. When they pass, he tries to, you know, divvy that stuff up as best he can. Whatever. It's the same argument that Ron Paul makes. The problem is not the earmarks. The problem is the budget. The problem is the unconstitutional nature of the authority. When Congress has unlimited authority, well, guess what? People are going to bribe congressmen in order to take their piece out of the honeypot, you know, to reach their hand in and they get their piece of the treasury. That's a fact. It is unavoidable. The problem is the unlimited power of the Congress when it comes to appropriations, Ron Paul says. And it's the same thing with foreign policy. The problem is we have an empire. And you know what? I'm sure the Kazakhstan lobby and the Poland lobby and the Mexico lobby and whoever else are just as pernicious. Not as successful as the Israel lobby, which is, you know, as powerful in this country as the AARP or the National Rifle Association, without a doubt, which is ranks among the absolute most powerful lobbies in the country. But America has a world-spanning empire, and so guess what? Big surprise. Different countries around the world want to take advantage of our power, try to create a win-win situation where American politicians can do well and they can do well. The problem is the empire. The problem is the unlimited authority of the Congress to do with violent force, at least to attempt to accomplish with violent force, anything that anyone can convince them to try to do. That's the problem with the earmarks and the budget, and that's the problem with the Israel lobby. If Israel was the empire, then America would have a massive lobby in Israel trying to influence them to do what we want. But, you know, there's a great article on antiwar.com that ran a week ago. It's Philip Giraldi's article. And, in fact, let me see if I don't remember the title off the top of my head, but I can look at it right here real quick. It's Neo-Libs and Neocons, United and Interchangeable. And what Philip Giraldi does in this article is he just simply goes through and lists the various candidates, the major party presidential candidates, the big three on either side, big four even, I think, if you include Thompson on the Republican side, and explains how all of them have neocons for advisors. You would think that the Colin Powell type realists would be on the rise, as evil as that war criminal is. You would think that the realists would be on the rise with the new candidates and that the neocons would be on their way out, but it's just not the case. And it isn't just Rudy Giuliani hiring Norman Podhoretz. It's all of the major party candidates have hired neoconservatives, military-industrial complex, Israel lobby types to be their foreign policy advisors. And there is, as far as I can tell, no end to this nightmare anytime soon. In fact, let me see if I have it right here. Try to play this clip of Hillary. Yeah, this is Hillary talking about the redirection and why Maliki's got to go. And it's because of, what she calls the new war.
We can't be fighting the last war. We have to be preparing to fight the new war.
And I don't think she could be any more clear than that. Do you guys? That's basically the deal. Hillary Clinton cannot wait to have her hands on absolute power so that she can kill people the way George Bush and Dick Cheney have had so much fun doing lately. And, here's some music. This is Chaos Radio 95.9 in Austin. If anybody wants to call in, it's 512-646-6446.
Three, that's a magic number. Three. It's the magic number.
Three.
Somewhere in this hip-hop soul community was born three, they stubbed me, and that's the magic number.
What does it all mean?
Difficult preaching is posthumous pleasure. Pleasure in preaching starts in the heart. Something that stimulates the music in a measure. Measure in the music, racing three parts. Casually see, but don't do like the soul. Cause seeing and doing are actions for monkeys. Doing hip-hop, hustle, no rock and roll. Unless your name's Brewster, cause Brewster's a punk.
Three.
Parents let go, cause it's magic in the air. Criticizing rap, shows you're out of order. Stop looking, listen to the phrase and Fred Astaire's. And don't get offended while Mace Dosey does your daughter. A tri-camera roll system is now set. Fly around the store under Daisy Productions. It stands for the inner sound. Y'all in your Quebec that the action not a trick, but show me the function. Everybody wants to be a DJ, everybody wants to be an MC, but being speakers are the best, and you don't have to guess. Still our soul posse consists of three, and that's the magic number.
Three.
This here piece of the pie is not dessert, but the cost that we dine. And three out of every darn time, the effect is where the daisy grows in your mind. Showing true position, this here piece is kissing the part of the pie that's missing, where that negative number fills up your casualty. Maybe you can subtract it, you can call it your lucky partner, maybe you can call it your adjective. But odd as it may be, without my one and two, where would there be my three? Mace Posse me, and that's the magic number.
What does it all mean?
Focus is formed by flaunting the soul. Souls who flaunt style gain praise by pounds. Comment on speakers who honor the scroll. Scroll written daily creates a new sound. Listeners listen, cause this here is wisdom. Wisdom of a speaker, a dumb and a plug. Set aside a legal substance to feed them for now. Get them high off this dialect drug. Time is a factor, so it's time to count. Count not the negative actions of one. Speakers of soul say it's time to shout. Three forms the soul to a positive sum. Dance to this fix and flex every muscle. Space can be filled if you ride like my lumber. Advance to the tune, but don't do the hustle. Shake, rattle, roll to my magic number. Now you may try to subtract it, but it just won't go away. Three times one.
What is it?
One, two, three.
That's a magic number.
Yo, what's up?
One, two, three. Hey, children. What does it all mean?
Whoa, whoa, whoa. One, two, three.
I would like to.
Freedom is the only
answer to America. Fuck yeah, America. Fuck.
All right. This is Anti-War Radio on Chaos Radio 95.9, 92.7 FM in Austin, Texas. KAOS 959.com, streaming live on the internet all day and night every day. Thanks for listening to the show. I don't know. I guess I'm surprised that anybody wants to sit here and listen to this crap. I get emails sometimes. People go, yeah, man, I just love your rants. Boy, you just start going off. Oh, that's some great radio. And I sit here and think, God, I can't believe anybody's sitting here listening to this. I got no callers, no interaction whatsoever. I have no guests on the show today. Nothing but bad news and a chip on my shoulder. And apparently you guys like it. This is something I learned from the Stu Bykofsky interview. You know, I don't usually interview the enemy on this show because I figure they got all the airtime in the world that they need. And, you know, I try to feature the writers and reporters and players in the events of the day who don't get a chance to explain it their way like they should, for the most part. But, you know, I completely botched that interview. I basically did nothing but yell at that guy for 20 minutes. I didn't even interview him. No, he was a despicable piece of crap, and so I don't really feel too bad about it or anything. But what's interesting to me is what I thought was probably the worst interview I've ever done got more attention than any interview I've ever done. And more praise. A couple of people noticed that I was a jerk and pointed that out, and I appreciate that. But I got emails from all over the world going, yeah, man, you kicked that guy's ass. Now, I guess, if anything, that's kind of a clue of how pissed off people are, man. It's like everybody's waking up with that same chip on the shoulder that I got in the morning, but poor bastards don't have a radio show to scream and yell about it on. And so, I guess, you know, I'm glad that you guys, you know, appreciate listening to me get it off of my chest and feel like, you know, I guess if I'm a jerk, at least I'm on your side, right? I'd like to win people over, but, you know, if all I really do is tell people who know what's right that, hey, man, it's all right. You're right. you know, relieve a little pressure on you that way, then I guess that's good enough for me. And really just getting it off of my chest in the first place. And I don't want to talk about Iraq anymore, but I do want to say really quickly that, did you notice that 15 American soldiers died yesterday, big, Black Hawk helicopter crash? 14 of them, I think, in that, and then one in another incident. 154 Iraqis killed, 175 wounded. Today, one GI killed, 66 Iraqis, 48 wounded so far. The next headline down on the front page of antiwar.com, Bush, no Iraq pullout while I'm president. Yeah, or Hillary or anybody else. Well, I say we go get Saddam and get out. Because he's Hitler, he's a bad guy. We ought to go in there and do a regime change real quick, like, and then come home. Oh, is that what you think, huh? Is that what you think? That handing the vice president your son and a blank check means go get Saddam and then the war will be over in a couple of months? Is that what you thought? Maybe you should have looked into it a little bit before you gave them your son and all your money. You know, Charles Goyette interviewed Ricks, Thomas Ricks from The Post, who wrote the book Fiasco. And he said, oh, I think we're going to be there 15 or 20 years. Well, you understand what that means? That means that we can't go yet because everything's not perfect yet. Is just give us 6 more months that we're going to keep doing that. So by his count, 20 years, let's just call it on the low end, a 20-year occupation of Iraq. guess he means 20 more years. So that means we'll only have to hear, you know, 80 or 100 more times. Just 6 more months. Just give us 6 more months. You know, they say that every couple of months or so. Every 2 or 4 months or so, they say, just give us 6 more months. We can't leave now. Things would be bad if we left. Look at what a horrible mess we've made. We can't leave it like this. That same talking point that you thought you'd kill yourself if you heard it one more time from these people. That you have basically, you know, the rest of your life to hear that from the American government. Or I don't know, maybe they'll just, maybe before too long people just stop needing excuses anymore, you know? I guess if they kill any Iraqi who's willing to resist to the point that there's none left in the entire country anymore, you know, between the ages of 9 and 70, and I guess it'll be peaceful. We'll just think of it like occupying Japan. Oh, they're our friends. We're their guests. Yeah, we're not militarily occupying their land. No, we're there to protect them, those lucky Japanese. It'll be like that. Oh, those lucky Iraqis, man. Actually, it would be like this. Those darn ungrateful Iraqis. Can't believe they're still throwing Molotov cocktails over the walls. Don't they know that we're there to protect them? We'll be hearing that for the rest of our lives. Well, I don't know. TV said that Saddam Hussein had an advanced nuclear weapons program. Ah, jeez. You know, there's an article on LouRockwell.com from yesterday. It's actually the spotlight article today on antiwar.com. And it's by Rick Fisk, who's a fellow Austinite. I don't know if I've ever met the guy. I don't think so. But anyway, he's been writing for Lou Rockwell lately. And he wrote this article, Remembering Al Qaim. Qaim, Qaim, something, Q-A-I-M. And this is the place in Iraq where they did their uranium mining and purifying and so forth in the 1980s, in the very, very early 1990s. And Rick Fisk's article here is basically rehearsing the fact that our government accused Iraq of having an advanced nuclear weapons program and accused them of attempting to buy 500,000 tons of what I guess half-refined uranium, yellowcake uranium, from the African country of Niger. And this was pure lies, and of course it was based on forged documents. And hell, at the time they even showed on TV, well, here's a whole bunch of even more refined than yellowcake uranium sitting under IAEA lock and key in a storage shed in Iraq. That is, yes, Saddam Hussein had uranium, and yes, it was all declared and had all been turned over to the UN and was in a UN building with a padlock on the door. Why would Saddam Hussein need to attempt to buy 500,000 tons? How the hell is he supposed to get it there? I mean, you talk about implausible conspiracy theories. Saddam Hussein was going to buy 500,000 tons of yellowcake uranium without anybody noticing and import it from well over 1,000 miles away. What, 2,000 miles away, maybe? Oh, far. Niger and Iraq, they ain't neighbors. Talk about ridiculous propaganda. The fact that they lied this country into war based on evidence like that is just incredible. But Rick Fisk in this article, the Spotlight article today on antiwar.com, reminds us that Valerie Plame's name was leaked not just to discredit Joe Wilson and claim that he was a mama's boy on a junket, that his wife got him the job, and that, you know, to try to discredit him for discrediting Cheney and the cabal's lies about uranium from Niger. But they were killing two birds with one stone. Valerie Plame worked at Brewster Jennings and Associates, which was a CIA front company. And guess what? She was working on Iran and Iraq. And by getting rid of her, and by outing not only Valerie Plame, but by outing Brewster Jennings and Associates, they ruined America's intelligence on the nuclear black market in regards to Iran and Iraq. Any exculpatory evidence, as he points out in this article on the spotlight today at antiwar.com, she would no longer be in a position to feed into the intelligence channels, so forth. It was actually Valerie Plame's unit that got the Italian rocket tubes that were then spun as being part of a centrifuge. And I don't mean they were spun in a centrifuge. I mean they were spun by liars in the media as being for a centrifuge for Saddam Hussein's advanced nuclear weapons program. We believe, in fact, he has reconstituted nuclear weapons, said Dick Cheney. And it was all lies. And I believe that Rick Fisk is absolutely right, that one of the main motivations for leaking the name of Valerie Plame was to shut down the CIA's operation, because Dick Cheney would rather have no intelligence than the truth. It makes it much easier to lie in a vacuum than when you have the CIA saying, And I believe that that is why Dick Cheney outed Valerie Plame. It was part of his war against America's intelligence agencies. He would rather have no information than the truth. That way he can make up lies and get away with it easier. And poor Rick Fisk laments the fact in his article that this is working, you know? The fact that they just lied us into a war based on a non-existent nuclear weapons program means nothing. It matters nothing in the mind of the American media. What? The country next door has weapons of mass destruction? Oh, geez, well, we ought to have a preemptive war against them, I suppose. Learn absolutely nothing. We're going to have another war, and it's going to be such a disaster. I think that Norman Podhoretz, who is this country's number one promoter of war with Iran, is right when he says that the anti-Americanism, the backlash from an American attack on Iran, will make our current situation look like a love fest. The consequences of war against Iran are going to be far-reaching. And you know what they say? Yeah, World War II started when Hitler invaded Poland. They always leave out Stalin, when Hitler and Stalin invaded Poland. That's when World War II began. Well, it's looking more and more like, yeah, that's when World War III began, when America invaded Iraq. But they're not going to call it the Iraq War. It's going to be World War III. That's what they're pushing for here. And, you know, this is months ago, and it's, you know, tired and repetitive, but Zbigniew Brzezinski testified before the American Senate in, I think, January, and said, look, Dick Cheney is looking for any excuse that he can seize on to justify a war. Any pretext he can. If there's a terrorist attack, he's going to say it's Iran's fault. And he says, if we do this war, Imperial Senators, you listen up and you listen good. We're going to own the real estate between Jordan and Pakistan. And really, you know, there's good likelihood that the entire Middle East could be destabilized for the worse, and that Jordan could fall, and that we could end up literally owning all the land from the Mediterranean Sea to India. And Pakistan could fall as well. And we could have all of South Asia in a massive conflagration. And of course, that's what the neocons want. Faster, please. We have to turn the Middle East into a boiling cauldron, writes Michael Ledeen over and over again from the pages of the National Review. Faster, please. We need to turn this region into a boiling cauldron. And then everything will be really cool after that.
Started with Iran, because Iran is mother. Iran, ever since the State Department's been keeping a list of state sponsors of international terrorism, Iran has always won the blue ribbon. in the war against the Terror Masters are states, because I don't believe that you can have a really dangerous terrorist organization without a base in a state that sponsors them. Those Terror Masters are at war with us. That's why we're fighting, because they attacked us. As long as those tyrants exist in the Middle East, they will arm, aid, train, support terrorists who are going to come and kill us wherever they can, including Des Moines. It's what America exists for. We should be supporting people who want freedom against people who want tyranny. We are a vast, if you like it, revolutionary, if you don't like it, destabilizing force in the world. We destabilize the world every day. And our only real choice in foreign policy is how to change the world, not whether to change the world. We're not very good at foreign policy, typically. We are really good at war. Yeah, Americans like war.
Co-ed football team in the Southeastern Conference. How many times will I say that? Let's bring in right now a guy that has really taken at least the internet by storm. And Ron Paul. I dropped my son off at the University of Alabama this past week. There were homemade Ron Paul signs all over the place down there. And I'm seeing that more and more wherever I go. In my hometown of Pensacola, you go and people are just, they are just making signs and sticking them up all over the place. I haven't seen a lot of presidential campaigns like that. And so let's talk to Ron Paul right now. Hey, how you doing, Congressman?
Doing fine, Joe. Thank you.
What's going on the campaign trail right now for you?
Well, we have to check with the leaders, and they're out there in the hinterland, and we have to ask them what they're doing these days.
Well, it looks like they're making a lot of signs in their garages and sticking them up on telephone poles across the country. I saw you at the straw poll. You just ignited that crowd out there, and it seems that every time you go on, even like Bill Maher, you have the strangest group of people supporting you. I mean, Bill Maher has a very liberal audience, and yet it seemed that there was a libertarian streak out there and wherever you go.
Well, you know, to me, that's the most interesting part and the most exciting part. A reporter told me the other day they were in Florida, and they came across a table of somebody that just set it up. And they asked him, there were three of them there, and they said, well, what do you represent? And one was a Republican, one was a Democrat, and one was an Independent. So I think that's pretty neat because, as you know, I stick to the Constitution, and I think the Constitution brings people together rather than divisive. So to me, it's pretty exciting.
Well, and of course, it's not only that you have a libertarian message on the economic front, but also when it comes to the war in Iraq, you were one of the few Republicans that opposed that war. Are you finding that it's hard to bring mainstream Republicans over to your side because of that?
Less so every day. Because they know, somebody the other day said, well, I was always for it, but we've given them enough time and we're tired of it. So they're coming around. And of course, I approach it not from a left viewpoint. I talked about why don't we only go to war unless, you know, when we declare it and then win it. And so it's a conservative approach. And the old right conservative position was anti-war. I mean, that was the old Robert Taft position. So it's not so strange. Republicans should feel good about taking this position. Actually, George Bush won his first election, you know, with his position, a humble foreign policy. And that's what I'm talking about. So it is popular. It's just been these last several years, the atmosphere that's been stirred up, I think sometimes deliberately after 9/11, that people are supposed to be fearful, willing to give up their freedoms, willing to go to war. And I think they're tired of it because it's bankrupting the country. And I think I've tapped into that sentiment.
Well, shouldn't we be fearful after 9/11 that those attacks could happen again?
Yeah, but I don't think we should be so fearful that we give up our liberties and go to needless war. I mean, we should. The thing that we should have done was gone after Osama bin Laden, and we didn't do it. And when people realize he used to be our ally, they all of a sudden think, well, there's something wrong with our foreign policy. So I think we shouldn't be so fearful as to being aware of what's happening. And I think a lot of people are starting to realize that our interventions around the world does stir up hatred toward us, and that's just common sense. So I think they're coming around to realizing that.
You talked about a Robert Taft foreign policy, a more isolationist foreign policy, but didn't the attacks of September 11th change the rules of the game?
No, not really. That's sort of like saying, you know, something happens, changes it, you know, our Ten Amendments to the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, or changes the, truth doesn't change because something happens. No, I think that everything really remains the same, but we should become alert and understand, you know, what motivates suicide terrorism and then deal with it. But if you ignore that and go off and do the same thing that motivates suicide terrorism, the problem gets worse. There are more Al-Qaeda now than ever before. There was no Al-Qaeda in Iraq. Now there are plenty and growing. So the chaos that we created there has actually made our problems much worse.
What do you think motivates suicide terrorists?
Well, Robert Pape wrote a book about this, and it's called Dying to Win, and he analyzes this in great detail, more than any other individual. He says it's occupation, and it's not religion. Religion plays a part in it, but it's occupation. And you have to think of it as, how would we as Americans react if the Chinese were on our land here telling us to live like they do, and that we had to obey their laws and their religion and impose their will on us? We'd be shooting them too. So it's occupation of foreign powers that makes that motivates people to commit suicide terrorism.
But we weren't occupying Iraq on September 11th, 2001, were we?
No, but Iraq didn't attack us.
But
the Saudis attacked us.
Okay. Well, Osama bin Laden attacked us.
But we were in Saudi Arabia. We had a base on their holy land. We had been bombing Iraq, and we had been over there for dozens of years, and a lot of people had died because of our policies there.
Well, we had 10,000 troops in Saudi Arabia, but we've had troops in South Korea for, what, 50, 60 years? We've had troops in Germany. Does that justify the attack of American workers at the Twin Towers?
No, I didn't say it justified it. I just said it explains it. And it doesn't mean that every time you're there that it's going to do it. But when people are upset, other cultures do it too. In Sri Lanka, the same thing happens. It's not a Muslim. It isn't the Muslims that are doing the suicide terrorists.
Talk about the Republican Party's failure to curb spending and to balance the budget and to bring down the debt since Republicans have been running Washington, D.C. Of course, Democrats took over this past fall, and spending actually has remained just as bad, and earmarks are actually up, and the New York Times reports that Democrats are actually bragging about the earmarks that they're bringing home. But David Walker, who runs the General Accounting Office, talked about a couple weeks ago a meltdown, an economic meltdown that America's facing in the next 20, 30 years because of Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, the deficit, the debt, and says we're just doing absolutely nothing about it.
Well, it's the political situation because nobody can vote against the spending. I mean, just talking about this war, a lot of people don't want to lose. They don't want to give up. They don't want to change the foreign policy. We're spending up nearly $1 trillion overseas in foreign adventurism. You'd have to change that. But we'd have to change our attitude about welfareism. But it's not easily done. So they resort to spending, getting reelected, borrowing and taxing, and then the inflation, the fact that the Federal Reserve creates money and credit out of thin air to tide us over, just like they've done this week. The markets are saying that they're overextended. There's too many economic bubbles. The dollar is overextended. The market tries to correct that, and that means there's, you know, the natural tendency for a collapse or a deflation. But the Fed, what do? All they have, the only tool they have left is more inflation. Last week, they, you know, all the central banks pumped in like $500 billion of new money that they create out of thin air. So you can't solve the problem of inflation with inflation. You have to eventually have sound money. You have to have people live within their means, and you have to have a government that's designed for protection of liberty, not policing the world, and not runaway welfare. It's doomed to fail, and that's what Walker's telling us, and I agree with him, except it's going to be sooner than 30 years. I think you're starting to see it come unraveled right now.
All right. Ron Paul, congressman from Texas, thank you so much, presidential candidate. Let me tell you, Ron, a lot of people out there in the Republican primary trying to seize the mantle of Ronald Reagan, but when it comes to economic issues, you're the only guy out there that's really delivering the same message that Ronald Reagan delivered for 30 years. Thanks so much for being
with
us. Thank you, Joe. Greatly appreciate it. We'll be back.
Give me the day.
Anti-War Radio, Chaos Radio, 95.9 in Austin, Texas. And, yeah, I'm Scott Horton. And, man, I gotta say, that Ron Paul is something else. And you know what? I know how hollow it sounds. I think Lou kind of alluded to this earlier, too. It's a little bit embarrassing having to talk, having to say good things about a politician. How must I sound to people out there? You know what I mean? I mean, literally and seriously, I hate the state. I hate everything they do. And I think that they should not exist. I think that they are completely illegitimate. And I hate every politician I've ever heard of. Hate them. I'm a real jerk. I'm not one of these people, oh, you know, you really shouldn't hate people. I mean, I guess I know that in my brain or whatever, but in my heart, no. I'm a sick bastard. I hate these people. I hate them for what they're doing. But I love Ron Paul like he's my own goddamn grandfather, man. I mean it. He's the best congressman in American history, period. I was so happy, man. I saw this link the other day. Thomas Woods, the author of The Politically Incorrect Guide to American History. When Ron Paul trounced him by 1,000,000% at the Alabama Strong Poll, a Washington Times reporter was there. You know, the conservative Sung Young Moon paper out there in D.C. And they quoted Tom Woods as saying, as a historian, I can say with certainty that Ron Paul is the greatest congressman we have ever had. I just thought, wow, talk about being quoted in the newspaper, man. Right there at the top of this article about Ron Paul kicking their ass. 216 votes for him, 14 for Romney in second place. And Tom Woods said the perfect quote, gave him the perfect quote, and I think he's right. And I hate to talk that way about a politician, and I'm sure that I sound like some sort of pathetic shill saying that I love a politician. And, you know, I don't know. Heroes are for kids, right? Not supposed to have heroes when you're an adult. You're supposed to be realistic about stuff. Hey, what the hell? I still have skateboard heroes that are my leftover heroes from when I was a little kid, but they're still my heroes. I mean, come on, Lance Mountain? Oh, man, I just pissed off Darren with that one. I'm sorry, D. Hosoi, then. Lester Kasai. If I can have Hosoi for a hero, then I can have Ron Paul for a hero. And you know what? Specifically, the point about why the suicide hijackers were willing to fly a plane into a building screaming, ah, die you motherfuckers, ah, all the way into the thing was because of hate. It wasn't because of a promise of virgins in heaven. It wasn't because they were, poor, uneducated dimwits who had been manipulated by their religious brainwashers. Those hijackers were graduate students. Those hijackers were rich kids with good educations who were full of hate. Hate. And it wasn't because their minister told them to be hateful. It was because they could see with their own eyes what American foreign policy was doing to people in the Middle East. Occupying their and defiling with impunity their holy lands, propping up dictators, the endless bombing of Iraq from the bases in Saudi Arabia, the sanctions. That's why they did it, for earthly reasons. And America, as Ron Paul said in the debate, if we think we can just go around the world and do whatever we want without engendering hatred against us, then we have a serious problem. That is going to cost us. It has cost us dearly. But, you know, maybe 3,000 here and there. maybe 3,000 American civilians every once in a while is worth it to the American establishment in order to have their world empire. Have you considered that? That they think it's worth it? Well, Ron Paul doesn't think it's worth it. And he tells the truth about why they did what they did on September 11th and what America must do to prevent that from happening, such as kill the guys who are the actual dangerous Al-Qaeda led by bin Laden and Zawahiri, as should have been done for the last 6 years. It would have been over 6 years ago if they'd even tried back then. And stop meddling in the Middle East. I mean, hell, Lewis Black in the Austin Chronicle got it perfect. You know, God, look at me reading page two, or letters at 2 a.m. or whatever the hell it is. I always hated that, page two, I think it is. I always hated that. Pompous, liberal, know-it-all, know-nothing garbage. But he got it perfect. He said, look, you're fighting a stateless band of radicals. By waging wars against the states in the region, all you can do is make more of them. You dumbasses. And Ron Paul understands that. And again, there's my argument from the first part of the show. Joe Scarborough just doesn't understand. He just doesn't understand. And Ron Paul's there to explain it to him, and I don't think there's really anybody better to explain it. And in fact, I want to play you this other clip. It's only 2 minutes long of Ron Paul in this other interview, and I apologize because I forget the name of the guy conducting the interview here, but it was a YouTube video that I stole this audio clip. It's called Ron Paul Explains Robert Pape, and this is in regards to American foreign policy. And how it relates to the attacks of September 11th. And for anybody just tuning in, no, as exactly as Ron Paul explained to Joe Scarborough, this does not excuse or justify any murder by anyone. It's an explanation. It's the reason. It's not an excuse. It's not an attempt to diffuse responsibility away from the 19 hijackers, from bin Laden and Zawahiri, from Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, from the American bureaucrats who refuse to do their goddamn job. It doesn't diffuse responsibility for all those responsible in all the various ways they were responsible for that attack. It just assigns some more responsibility around, particularly to people like Bill Clinton. And listen to Ron Paul explain his understanding of the book Dying to Win by Robert A. Pape and what we can learn about suicide terrorism from that book. Real quick here, just 2 minutes long. Ron Paul on Robert A. Pape's book Dying to Win.
Well, Dying to Win is a very important book. Of course, Michael's book on imperial hubris, these are all important books. But Dying to Win is critical because Pape is the only one that has gone back and studied several hundred individuals who committed suicide terrorism to try to understand their motivation. And when I started reading his book, I was convinced that he was wrong on his thesis, because his thesis was that it wasn't religious fanaticism. And, you know, we've all heard that, and I accepted that. So I said, well, I'm going to read it anyway, but I'm skeptical. But by the time I finished it, he convinced me that, you know, religion can't be ignored, and that's part of it, and their religion's different than our religion. But the number one cause was occupation by a foreign power. And he pointed out some important issues. He said the country that has the most suicide terrorism is Sri Lanka. That isn't even Muslim. That has to do with the Hindus and the Indians, you know, fighting with each other. But they commit a lot of suicide terrorism. And the most radical countries that have more radical Islamists, Iran and I think Sudan, they don't commit suicide terrorism. But they came from, you know, Saudi Arabia that felt like we were occupying. And even there was no suicide terrorism before the Iraqi war in Iraq. You know, it's hard to believe it, but even under Saddam Hussein, there was more tolerance there. You know, Christians lived there, and half of them now have been run out of the country.
Right.
So it's the occupation. He's convinced me of that, and we should understand that. that doesn't excuse them. I mean, they're still criminals, they're still murderers, and you know, all these things, and we have to deal with it. But we ought to understand why it occurs, so maybe we can neutralize it. And besides, changing our policy shouldn't be a big deal, because it's only changing the policy to what I think is a wonderful policy of non-intervention,
right,
following the Constitution, the advice of the founders. It's mm-hmm. very practical. Besides, we can't afford this warmongering stuff that we do anyway.
Certainly.
We're going broke.
And that is why Ron Paul ought to be the president of the United States. Am I right? Golly, can you imagine having a president who reads books? Who actually cares? I mean, I'll give Bill Clinton a little bit of credit. Not that I don't hate him, but at least he was interested. You know, they said about him that when his staffers would come to brief him, they had to work extra hard to make sure that they knew at least one thing about the situation that the president didn't already know. Because at least Bill Clinton paid attention. Doesn't imply for a moment that, you know, there was anything but pure malevolence and evil in his every action. But at least he was literate. And, you know, Ron Paul, somebody needs to pass this talking point on to Ron Paul. Because he keeps getting the same question over and over again, and he keeps answering it perfectly. Except the one thing that he's got to remind somebody like Joe Scarborough is, look, what Iraq has to do with it is the bases in Saudi Arabia were primarily serving as the launching pad for continuous bombing of Iraq and enforcement of the blockade. So, you know, that was basically what he was talking about, was America's policy toward Iraq since 1990. We've been bombing them for 10 years, and primarily from bases in Saudi Arabia. So there's your occupation and your war of continual bombardment and starvation all rolled into one there. And it is no secret. You know, even Glenn Beck, warmonger mouthpiece. I saw on his TV show last night, he was interviewing Michael Shore, and he talked about how back in 1998, he was reading bin Laden's stuff on the air. And he was saying, never mind what, you know, Bill Clinton says. You know, never mind what these politicians who don't want to pay any attention to this. Never mind that. Look at what this guy's writing. This is a serious danger. Well, if you do look at what bin Laden was writing in the 1990s, you'll see it was all about you people are going to pay for what you're doing to Iraq from your bases on our holy peninsula of Saudi Arabia. And it was as simple as that. And just to help refresh the Bill and Hillary Clinton policy and the Al Gore policy, the Madeleine Albright policy, the Sandy Berger and Strobe Talbot and so forth policy in the 1990s against Iraq. This is a clip of Madeleine Albright being interviewed by Leslie Stahl on 60 Minutes, justifying the murder of 500,000 children, specifically. Not that it's any better to murder adults, but that was the question, and this is how she answered it.
We have heard that 500,000 children have died. I mean, that's more children than died in Hiroshima. And you know, is the price worth it?
I think this is a very hard choice, but we think the price is worth it.
And so, see, now you understand why they crashed their planes into those towers. That clip got airtime in the Middle East, believe you me. Now you know why the former director of the bin Laden unit, Michael Scheuer, at the former CIA, published the book Imperial Hubris under the name Anonymous at the insistence of CIA headquarters. You'll understand why it is that he says that American foreign policy in the region is what recruits the terrorists to bin Laden's group. That's what does it. It's not Las Vegas, and it isn't, you know, mini skirts and sex change operations and Diet Coca-Cola. It is American foreign policy in the region that creates this backlash known as suicide terrorism against the United States. And according to Michael Scheuer, the former head analyst and director of the CIA's Bin Laden unit, the man who gave, he and his men gave Bill Clinton no fewer than 10 separate opportunities to capture or kill Bin Laden. At last count, I heard 13 chances that Bill Clinton refused to move on to take Bin Laden. And in fact, that's from a man who discounts the rumors or the reports that the Sudanese were trying to hand Bin Laden over. He doesn't count that. And I thought, the way I heard it, that was two or three attempts right there. So I don't know whether that's exactly the case or not. It seems like he would know. I don't know. But anyway, he says that there is only one candidate for president of the United States who understands what America is up against and is willing to level with the American people about what the hell is going on here. Michael Scheuer, the former head analyst at the CIA's Bin Laden unit, said, no, it's Ron Paul and reality versus everybody else. You can look it up. It's antiwar.com/Scheuer. S-C-H-E-U-E-R. There's everybody else, and then there's Ron Paul, who's willing to say, hey, look, I used to be wrong, but now I see, because I read this book by this professor from the University of Chicago named Robert A. Pape called Dying to Win that does the mathematics and explains with empirical proof the case that the cause of suicide terrorism is occupation. It is the presence of combat forces on the ground. And the role, and he said a couple of times vaguely, there is a part that religion has to play in it. But, and I think he understands this, but doesn't elaborate, usually on this point. It's the difference in the religion between the occupiers and the occupiees. That is what plays a part. It's not, oh, I'll get, yeah, if you go kill yourself, you'll get to screw 75 virgins forever and ever. That's not what it is. It's not, see, it says right here in the book that you ought to do what I say. It's not that. It's the difference between the religion along with the language, the ethnicity, the nationality. It's the difference between the occupiers and the occupiees that make people resort to suicide terrorism. You know, being conquered and occupied sucks. But being conquered and occupied by people who are absolutely foreign to you, I mean, right? How foreign are Arabs to you? Not the ones that you see every day. It's easy to tell they're human beings. But I mean, over there across the water where they speak strange languages and wear strange costumes. How alien would it be if they were occupying the United States? It's the fear, right, that the occupying army is here to change your religion, is here to change your most basic customs and beliefs and traditions and values. That is what makes people resort to suicide terrorism and supporting suicide terrorism. That is how entire communities in Palestine and in Iraq will tacitly consent and harbor suicide bombers among them. This is the kind of behavior that cannot last at all without the cooperation of the community. And it's not because all Arabs are evil that they would support something like that. You know, it's funny, I just saw Platoon the other night, which was, you know, as much of a hack as Oliver Stone really is, and as hacky as that Charlie Sheen movie is in a lot of ways. It wasn't made after September 11th. This wasn't an allegory in the movie. It was just, this is one of the clips, was Vietnamese, I don't know if it was North Vietnamese Army or Viet Cong they were portraying, I guess it was a North Vietnamese Army regular, strapped with explosives, who runs as fast as he can, zigzags, and dives into the command tent and detonates a bomb strapped around his body and blows up all the people in the command tent. A suicide bombing by a North Vietnamese communist, atheist. Right there in Platoon on my TV in my living room, you've all seen it before. As Ron Paul points out, in Sri Lanka, more suicide bombings there than anywhere except Iraq these days. And nobody's Muslim in that fight. It's about occupation. It's about having people who are different coming in and occupying. You know, if America conquers Canada, which is coming soon, look out, Canadians. They're not going to suicide bomb us. They're going to say, ah, shit, but, you know, what are you going to do? We have basically the same culture for the most part. And hopefully, you know, cross your fingers, when America conquers Canada, it won't be too bloody. Maybe their government will just sign an agreement and hand over the nation. We're not going to have Canadian suicide bombers. Why? Because we don't really look different than them. We don't speak different than them. Well, a little bit. We have basically the same culture, same religion, etc. in an overall sense. And so they're not going to resist as violently as people who are so much different. But anyway, it's as simple as that. That is the fact. American foreign policy causes suicide terrorism. That doesn't mean it's okay. It doesn't mean bin Laden's a hero. It doesn't mean it's your fault. Unless you're a Bill Clinton supporter, then I guess it is your fault. A George Bush or a George Bush father supporter, a Ronald Reagan or Jimmy Carter supporter, then it's your fault. But other than that, it doesn't diffuse responsibility from the guilty, from the hijackers, from the men who put them up to it, from the people who were in on it, from the people who called each other and congratulated each other for how successful their attack had been. It doesn't diffuse responsibility from them, but it does suggest a different course in foreign policy, doesn't it? That maybe it's not in our interest to have to give up a few thousand or maybe more American civilians at a time in order to maintain a world empire. And maybe there's a lesson in this, that we can head off the next series of attacks by not being the aggressor. That's not surrendering to bin Laden. That's not surrendering to terrorists who barely control a county on the border of Pakistan. It's not surrendering anything. It's doing what's right in the first place, which is being a limited republic at peace rather than a world empire at war. It just happens to be the right policy anyway. This intervention doesn't do us good, only bad. And see, when you ask, honestly ask, why do they hate us? And you find out the answer, because American politicians keep sending the military to butcher them and occupy their holy land, then it might occur to you that perhaps a different foreign policy is warranted, or that at least it might be worth taking a look at, you know, as a possibility. And man, there's so much other news I had on here that I didn't get a chance to talk about. Hey, I'm going to be on Policy Watch, some TV show. I think you can watch it online. I think it's policywatch.org or something like that. I think it's 4 p.m. Eastern time today. I believe we'll be talking about Iran. So you can look that up if you want. Thanks, everybody, for listening. I'm already over time. This is Anti-War Radio on Chaos Radio 95.9 in Austin, Texas. And here's some Bob Dylan. I forget if it was Mud Shark or Steve C or which one of the guys on the blog sent me this song, but I like it. So listen here to Bob Dylan.
Come, you masters of war. You that build the big guns. You that build the death planes. You that build all the bombs. You that hide behind walls. You that hide behind discs. I just don't want you to know I can see through your masks. You that never done nothing but build to destroy. You play with my world like it's your little toy. You put a gun in my hand and you hide from my eyes. And you turn and run farther when the fast bullets fly. Like Judas of old, you lie and deceive. a world war can be won. You want me to believe, but I see through your eyes, and I see through your brain, like I see through the water that runs down my drain. You fasten all the triggers for the others to fire, and then you sit back and watch when the death count gets higher. You hide in your mansion while the young people's blood flows out of their bodies and is buried in the mud. You've thrown the worst fear that can ever be hurled, fear to bring children into the world, for threatening my baby, unborn and unnamed. You ain't worth the blood that runs in your veins. How much do I know but to talk out of turn? You might say that I'm young, you might say I'm unlearned, but there's one thing I know, I'm younger than you. Even Jesus would never forgive what you do. Let me ask you one question. Is your money that good? Will it buy you forgiveness? Do you think that it could? I think you will find, when your death takes its toll, all the money you made will never buy back your soul. And I hope that you die, and your death will come soon. I follow your casket by the pale afternoon, and I watch while you're lowered down to your deathbed, and I stand over your grave, and I'm sure that you're dead.